All guests come to you via the Fire Wings Hotline. Try one of their delicious flavors of wings today. Fire Wings, just wing it. We are coming to you from Little Caesars Arena while the Pistons are playing the Miami Heat. We're up in the hockey press box, so if you hear the sound in the background, that's what it is. Of course, we are going to talk about matchups with these two big games coming up on Sunday with Andy Benoit right now from MMQB and SI. Andy, it's Grant and Doug. How are you?
Hey, guys. I'm doing well. How are you?
We're doing good. Let's talk about this NFC Championship game first. I was very impressed with the Rams' offensive line against the front of the Cowboys. How do you think the Rams go about attacking their Saints defense on Sunday?
Yeah, I was impressed, too. That was a really dominant. I thought their center, John Sullivan, once I put on the film and watched that game again, I thought that was the best game I've seen any center have all season long. And I would never, John Sullivan, fine player, I would have guessed that that's the guy I would have said that about at this stage of the season especially. So the Rams, even their old guys, John Sullivan's mid-30s and has a bad back. Even those guys are playing great. The other thing that stood out, Grant, when I put on the Saints film from the Eagles game is how well their defensive tackles played. Even after Sheldon Rankins went down early, their best D tackle, Tyler Davison, who nobody talks about, he's a nose tackle, and then David Onyemata, who came in for Rankins, those two guys were very impressive against the run. So this is strength on strength here. And the Rams, they're one of the few teams in the NFL that truly needs their running game to hum in order for that offense to work. And it's almost always an outside zone running game. So just zone blocking. It's going to be a good battle. The Saints have the league's number two run defense.
When you look at what the Rams can do on the defensive side of the football, as you just mentioned, and Ndamukong Suh popped up last week, you know what Aaron Donald brings, Tlaib now back. As you look at this defense, what might they take away from this Saints ball club? Will it be Thomas? Will it be Ingram and Kimura? How do you look at that?
I think you have to start with Michael Thomas. Kimura, I've talked to coaches around the league, and Kimura is the guy that they fear more. I think the answers for Kamara are a little bit more built in. I think what they're going to do for Alvin Kamara is bring their free safety, LaMarcus Joyner, down and have him play near the line of scrimmage. Joyner's a former cornerback. They did that last time, and it had mixed results, but they can do that and probably double with the linebacker. To me, guys, Michael Thomas is the difference maker because he is so good on contested catches. And Drew Brees does not scare you over the top anymore. He does not have a lot of juice left in his arm. But at the intermediate levels on in-breaking routes where it's a short distance on a 15-yard path, it's not to the sideline or something like that, Brees to Thomas is a lethal combination, and that's what won the game for him last week. That's what won the game for him last time they played the Rams. Marcus Peters could not cover Thomas. Aqib Tlaib did not play in that game. He's back now. The Rams don't typically travel their corners. They don't match them up to specific guys when they have both Tlaib and Peters healthy. I think they're going to change that up for this game, and I think they're going to have Tlaib follow Michael Thomas.
We're talking with Andy Benoit. You can read everything, MMQB and SI. You know, when you look at the Rams, you talked about their running game. So that's part one. Part two, if they're able to run, that really sets up their play action, which they're really effective and need against this game on Sunday, don't they?
Absolutely, and I think, Grant, we're going to see it go in the inverse of that this week. I think they're going to use their play action to set up their run, because think about that Superdome crowd early in the game. The Saints defense will be jazzed up, playing off the momentum. They've got a young second-year linebacker, Alex Anzalone. He'll be on the field almost every snap. So will DeMario Davis. Those are their nickel linebackers. The Rams make you play nickel. I could see the Rams coming out, faking the handoff, getting those really amped-up linebackers to come down hard and throw over the top of them. And I think they need to do something like that to alter their momentum that's going to be inherently built in for the Saints. And then to get the Saints defense playing a little bit softer and a little bit more hesitant against the run.
One of the biggest pickups, Andy, C.J. Anderson, what does he bring to the Rams? Obviously, he's a big guy. I don't think a lot of people want to tackle him, but what is the little bit that he brings different?
Well, he's got fresh legs, for one. That's a big deal, I think. We've seen other running backs. I remember Sean Green for the Jets, who didn't become anybody, but he had a huge year one year, 2009, the year they went to the AFC Championship. He came in at the end of the season, was just fresher than everybody. That really changed the way I viewed running backs. I'm kind of seeing the Sean Green effect with C.J. Anderson. He fits their scheme very well. In fact, stylistically, I'm not saying he's better than Gurley. Not Gurley's a more talented player. Stylistically, you could argue that Anderson's a better fit for their ball control zone running game. He gets through small cracks very well. He has excellent vision. He's got thick, strong legs, and so a lot of his five-yard runs become eight-yard runs, and I think that's where the freshness is showing up.
All right, let's get to the AFC Championship game, and let's break this game down. Give us a couple of keys. Let's start first from the visitor's perspective. Look at this from New England's point of view.
It starts with, what do we want to do about Patrick Mahomes? Because he can beat you early in the down within structure, and he's very dangerous late in the down, when especially when he gets outside the pocket. We've seen him do that. The Ravens were a great example. The Ravens beat the Chiefs tactically a few weeks ago, and Mahomes wound up making plays against them anyway, and that's been the story of Kansas City's season. So how do you want to defend Mahomes? Last time, what they did against him, and it actually worked better than it seemed. It worked in the first half of that game when they faced Kansas City back in week six in New England. They were up 24-9 at one point, and Mahomes had thrown an interception or two. They'd failed on some third downs that the Chiefs were trying to convert. What the Patriots were doing was showing pressure and then dropping out of it. So they were getting Mahomes to play fast, but then adding bodies into coverage late in the down. The Patriots are a different defense now than when they saw Mahomes before. They've gotten much better at the blitz. So I think what we see this time is they're going to continue to show that pressure, but they're going to bring it some of the times. And they're going to make Mahomes play on their schedule a little bit. And they might get beat. They might get killed by that because someone's going to have to play one-on-one defense. But I think you do that to set the tone and get Mahomes reacting to you rather than letting Mahomes find his rhythm. The Chiefs are a lot better in their scripted plays. Andy Reid's very good at scripted plays early in the game. And then their offense, I don't know, I don't want to say it changes a little bit, but it's not quite as diverse once the game goes along. So I would come out early and try to attack them on those scripted plays.
When you talk about Patrick Mahomes and his ability to digest information and what you might see from the Patriots, the Patriots last week kind of took on a hue of the Ravens. Is there something that you see that they – you mentioned blitzing. Is there some different look that they may give them that you anticipate, Andy, or kind of status quo to what we see?
Well, I think it'll be those amoeba fronts, like you said, those Raven looks. And I think they'll bring some of them, and I think they'll drop out of some of them. The guy who's key to all this is Kyle Van Noy. He is their miscellaneous Swiss Army knife, X-Factor type player, whatever you want to call it. He can play man coverage. I think he'll spy Mahomes at times. He did in the last game. He's a very good blitzer. He's a good help defender when everybody else is playing man-to-man. So move Kyle Van Noy around, another guy, and you don't want to insert him out of the pass rush very much because he's their only really quality pass rusher, but Trey Flowers is athletic enough to drop into coverage at times too. So I would give Mahomes all of these things to process and make him have to continue to process it throughout the game. And again, this is not a formula to hold Mahomes to 10 points. He is a very smart QB. He's still going to beat you on some of that. But you got to figure, let's keep them to 30 or slightly below. That's got to be their thinking. And I think the way you do that is force Mahomes into a bad play or two. He will give you some of those opportunities.
Andy, if I told you one road team was going to win on Sunday, which one do you think it would be?
I think it would be New England because they can beat you. They can beat the Chiefs more in more ways than the Chiefs can beat them when you factor in both sides of the ball, the way the Patriots defense is playing. I think it's also interesting, guys. Normally, I dismiss home field advantage. I think that stuff gets overblown in the NFL. But when you're talking about the Superdome and Arrowhead at night, and obviously very big games,
yep.
These are maybe the only two games I could see where actually I do think home field advantage will play a factor.
Or maybe a Seattle, right? If Seattle was in this place, you'd probably put them too. But let me ask you about New Orleans because, you know, again, I go back to what we were talking about at the beginning. They're going to have to play a lot better than they played against Philadelphia to beat the Rams. Would you agree with that?
I would, yeah. I think they were better against Philly than the score indicated. Part of it was they had that long drive that they dominated, but it ate up so much clock that they kept the game a little bit lower scoring than traditionally a drive like that would. But Yes, overall, I agree. They've got to be a little bit better than they were last week. And the Rams have to probably be a little bit better in certain areas than they were against Dallas, too.
Defensive coordinator Brian Flores for the Pats. What is the relationship? Because, you know, Bill Belichick is defensive-oriented. Does he give him full autonomy to run that? Does he get involved? How do you see that relationship?
That's one of the few coaching situations that I have no insight on, because those Patriot guys don't talk to people like me off the record. They'll talk on the record. I've never asked them that. I don't know if they would answer that question on the record. So I don't know. Those Patriot coaches are hard to get to, which is odd because when you do talk to them, they're usually very good in the interview, but they don't want to go behind the scenes.
We were talking about earlier before you were on about what's going on in Dallas now that Scott Linehan has been fired. What type of coordinator do you think they're going to be looking for? What is it that offense needs to do that they have not been able to do? Or, you know, did we see a different offense, obviously, with Amari Cooper? I mean, when you look at the big picture there, what do you see?
I think they believe, if I had to guess, Jason Garrett was a backup quarterback for a long time. He understands the game from multiple directions. He used to be their play caller. We forget that. They took his play calling away and said, we want you to focus on running the team, and he's done a good job with that. But he's got a good offensive mind, so I'm sure he's got exactly what he wants in mind. And if I had to guess what it is he wants, someone who's going to scheme a little bit more for Prescott. Dak Prescott, the more I watch him, and I'm still not completely solid on what I think of him. He's a little bit streaky. I don't think he's a great passer. I think he can be a good passer at best. He's inconsistent, and that might always be the case because he's got a few mechanical glitches. I do think he's very smart, especially in the pre-snap phase. His leadership's tremendous. With a quarterback like that, and when you add in his mobility, which is a big deal for that offense, having a more scheme passing game, kind of like what the Rams do with Jared Goff, not that same kind of passing game, but the Rams' passing game derives from their running game. That's why they throw the ball on first down so much. That's why defenses are always guessing against them. You need to have that kind of an approach with Prescott. Do you guys remember Matt Schaub and how he played for Gary Kubiak and the Texans years ago? They would always do these rollouts and these half rollouts and these bootlegs, and Schaub never had a big arm. But it was all right because he ran the zone running scheme and the zone passing game. That kind of offense for Dak Prescott.
As we look back a little bit on the divisional round, were you surprised by the way that the Colts played at all? Did that surprise you? I anticipated a little more from them.
Oh, yeah, I did too. I thought they would win that game, to be honest. And I was surprised. You know, their defense was better than we realized. They started out poor because their offense went three and out for four straight possessions. Okay. And the defense was not into the game the way they wanted to be early. But in that second half, they kept the Chiefs totally in check. They won that battle, in fact, even with their pass rush not working. The problem was their offense got in a hole and never got out of it, and that allowed Kansas City's pass rush to get going. It was just one of those days for the Colts, and you hate to have those in the playoffs, but with 28 minutes into the game, they'd run 12 plays, they'd punted four times, they had 21 yards. Yeah, that's just a bad outing.
Hey, Andrew Luck was horrible in that game. I mean, there's no other way to say it. I mean, you can say all you want about this or that, but I expected so much more from him. He was terrible.
He missed some throws. He missed some throws that he normally makes, and some of his receivers that normally get open, T.Y. Hilton and Dontrell Inman, who the week before against Houston absolutely humiliated the Texans' corners, and those Texan corners are not much better or worse than the Chiefs' corners. Those guys couldn't get open either. There was just no timing and rhythm anywhere downfield, and it's credit to the Chiefs. I thought it was more good Chiefs than bad Colts, and I was really surprised by that because Kansas City's defense is not one that I believed in coming in. I didn't realize how much better they were at home statistically than on the road.
And that's another reason why I like them to beat New England, because of the defense at home and the fact that New England, you know, their playoffs success has pretty much come at home. They have not done a great job on the road in the playoffs, even though it's been a while. I know you said you would pick the Patriots if I told you one road team would have to win. How big of an advantage do you think playing at Arrowhead is for Kansas City in the night? I mean, is it 3 points? Is it 6 points? Or do you not even like to get into that type of talk?
It's hard for me to quantify it, yeah, but I do think it is an advantage, especially because their defense, when their defense is humming, Dee Ford is always involved with that, their edge rusher, their top edge player. He is very good at getting off the snap and timing the snap. And when you play in the crowd noise, the snap counts offensively can become a little bit more predictable because they have to simplify to negate the noise on offense. So Dee Ford, I think, has a chance to be destructive in this game. Now, the question is, oh, will Brady get the ball out before Ford can even factor in? And that's a hard one to know. But I think the conditions are more favorable to Kansas City than typical.
Andy, are there any injuries in either one of these games that as you look to, you say this is something to watch out for or an area that a team might be able to exploit?
No, not really. That's probably why these teams are the ones playing this week, and they're all pretty hell. I know the Saints lost Rankins at D-tackle last week, so they're now thin at defensive line. I think they can survive that, though. It's for this one game, then maybe the next game. No, these are healthy teams. I don't think anyone was on New England's injury report even. And the Rams, the only guy they lost all year was Cooper Kupp, and right. Josh Reynolds, their backup receiver, has done a nice job filling in for him.
Andy, we appreciate it. Enjoy the games this weekend. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Andy.
You too. Thank you, guys.
All guests come to you via the Fire Wings hotline. Try one of their delicious flavors of wings today. Fire Wings, just wing it. Halftime here in Detroit, 53-39. In favor of Detroit. And Blake Griffin, how about his first half? 16 points, 6 rebounds, 6 assists.
Man, he was an animal. I mean, we're just glancing at it as we're talking, but he's done it from the outside.
Yep.
Grant, you mentioned the fact that, man, he is one heck of a passer. They run the offense through
him.
Who
do you think the Kings are going to guard start with him tomorrow?
You know, do you remember what is his name? Eldon Campbell.
Okay.
Okay, long guy. Stuck Charles Barkley in the playoffs when he was with the Suns. Had a hard time shooting over Charles. So from that standpoint, I wonder if you would put a Willie Cauley-Stein on him. Only problem is I know then you got Nemanja Bjelica
on
Drummond, and that's just it's not a good matchup. The point is, at some point during the game, I think you try to stick him with a little bit of length and allow that person to be able to contest his shot but still keep him in front. Because part of what I see, Grant, is that when he puts the ball on the deck and he gets by his forward, he's willing to pass the ball and find Kennard and
right.
these guys, and they're knocking down shots. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Blake Griffin, as we told you, he contributes to 34% of the offense one way or the other.
That's
incredible.
It is. It's a big number. I mean, listen, you say 6 rebounds, 6 assists, Grant. I mean, you're pretty much doing a little bit of everything. You got 53 points, so those 6 assists, I'm sure that some of those were 3-pointers, so that's not just 12 points. We've watched some of these guys knock down some shots as we're sitting here. So this, unfortunately, only 39 points, 53-39. If this gets away from them, from Miami, Detroit's going to get to rest some guys, and that doesn't spell well for the Kings tomorrow night for sure.
All right, 3-3-9-11-40. That's 3-3-9-11-40. 800-920-1140. Kings and Pistons tomorrow, and then it's Sacramento at Brooklyn. Brooklyn's really playing well, and that is MLK Day and a matinee in Brooklyn before the Kings hit Toronto on Tuesday. So that's the next couple games coming up for Sacramento. Doug likes New England and New Orleans. I'm taking Kansas City and the Rams. If the Saints team that I saw last week against Philadelphia is the team that shows up this week, they're going to lose. They're going to have to play a lot better.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I just think, Grant, when you start talking about getting so close last year, as the Saints did, and a fluke play kind of sending them home. Sometimes you kind of, similar to what we've seen the Patriots do in the first game versus the Chargers, you know, I wrote the Patriots off. I think a lot of people did. And all of a sudden they come out and they play the type of game that you expect from the Patriots. I think this Saints team has the ability. Now, if you can take away Thomas, you can take away Kamara in a way that allows Drew Brees to have to really win this ball game. And he's going to have to fit into a lot of tight spots. Well, maybe you got something there, but I'm going to go with the home team in this one.
And the one thing, and you and I have talked about this. Well, not you and I. Everybody's been talking about this. I really hope that we are not coming on the air on whenever it is, because we're off Monday.
Yeah.
I really hope that we're not coming on the air talking about a bad officiating game. I mean, or one of the two, or a bad call that cost the team. I really am praying for that.
Yeah, I think the fans are as well, because I mean, you go back to Dez Bryant and the catch. Was it a catch? Was it not a catch in Green Bay? And then you all of a sudden the rule changes, and now that thing would have been a catch. Those are the things that as fans, you know, when you get that close and you're talking Super Bowls and divisional playoffs and championship series, you do not want to hear about referees and calls and different things. And I know a lot of this is the fact that as we watch Blake Griffin get an and one, these are things that the NFL is trying to do away with. The instant replay has done not really a great job, because many times, Grant, I don't know who that was the other week that botched the call, the referee in the booth, and you were talking about it.
Terry McCauley.
Yeah, sometimes you look at that, and I just don't understand what they're looking at. Uh-huh. I don't get it. So you're right. Hopefully when we come back, that's not the case.
All right, again, if you want to call the show, it's 339-1140, 800-920-1140. And a big game tonight in L.A. because DeMarcus Cousins is making his Warriors debut. It's been almost 1 year to the day that he tore his Achilles, so it's going to be very interesting, because the Warriors have been playing phenomenal basketball.
Yeah.
They come in with a big winning streak. They are playing so well, and it's going to be interesting to see how this all works out.
I would anticipate that this is a bit seamless. Will there be some bumps? Yeah, I definitely think they would. Why do I say that? Because, first of all, you got as an efficient team as you possibly can, and the efficiency is based upon ball movement and passing and cutting. There's no better big man passer in the NBA than DeMarcus Cousins when he was at the height of his game. Now, Harry Giles can't pass that basketball, so I'm starting
Blake
to put
Griffin's
him.
Blake Griffin's a pretty good passer.
And Blake is,
I mean,
as well.
But you're right. DeMarcus is an excellent passer.
Right. Now you pair that with the fact that when they go to the second unit and they start arresting some guys, you can put him at the forefront and allow him to shine. I just it's going to be a lot of fun to watch. I'm going to
check
it out.
I think his biggest issue is going to be on defense, not offense. I think offensively he'll fit in fine. I think his biggest issue will be transition on both offense and defense. But I think defensively is going to be his biggest challenge with the Warriors and the way they play defense.
The one thing about the way they play defense, I mean, we watch many players get hidden in the NBA defensively, and I don't see they got some solid defenders. They should be able to manage
that
in the
Something floor. Else I think he's going to have, it's going to take him a while to adjust. He's very handsy on defense, and he's always grabbing guys around the hips and everything else. He's always done that because you were allowed to, and now you can't. And I know that you can say, well, he knows about the rule change. You maybe can talk from a player's perspective. Yeah. Easier said than done.
It is. And you know what? You can talk about the rule change all you want. It's a point of emphasis. You don't even realize you're doing it, Grant. And for him, he's going to be, I think, thinking of a lot of different things. And those are the type of things he's really going to have to focus on that can get you in foul trouble.
A lot of times he's totally unaware when he commits a foul. I remember all the time he would look over at me and go, like, really? Did I foul? I mean, and he honestly, he really is totally unaware when he fouls someone. He is.
You got to go back and look at the video. I always knew when I fouled him.
He always used to come up to me after games and stuff and go, hey, was that really a foul? Or did I? I'm like, yeah, it was. You know, or he's not good at that. So he's going to have to. That's going to be interesting to see how he handles that.
Yeah. Well, we'll get back to the hotel hopefully in enough time to check out some of that.
All right. We'll be right back on Sports 1140 KHDK. All right. We are back with you on Sports 1140. KHTK, 339-1140, 800-920-1140. Let's get to a couple calls. I'm sorry, is it Anthony? Oh, Antonio, I'm sorry. Antonio, how are you? Welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. I like to play-by-play on the side watching the game up there in Detroit. Hey,
Thank you.
I heard you guys, Grant, I heard your take on the dynasty being over. I'm kind of disagreeing with you. I think Belichick somehow thinks of some kind of funky game plan. I kind of watched it against San Diego where he kind of mixed it up. I'm seeing Cordarrelle Patterson, ex-Raider, doing something that where he gets lined up in the backfield, and somehow the Gronk gets a couple touchdowns. Like I said, no weather being a factor, although it will be cold. Like you said, they got every device in the world to keep themselves warm. And I'm taking the Rams. You know, I like C.J. Anderson. I like to see Gurley get off. I still think he's not 100% with that knee.
The chances of two road teams winning are not great. I'm not saying that it can't happen, but that's highly unlikely.
I agree. It's a push, though. It's a pick'em in KC. It's 3 points, and the home team gets three. But I wanted to ask you real quick the Marcus Cousins question. You know, I heard you go on both lines, and you never backed up in this game, and I respect that because it takes a lot. You're going to run into the guy sooner or later, and I know that you deal with him on a personal basis. But would you think somehow that he turns it around, besides his game, but, you know, being in a winning culture and being an upstanding citizen, which we know what he does in the community, but as respecting the league officials and not being a knucklehead, you see him somehow turn that around. I'm really hoping that.
Well, why would he
that,
turn it around now? He's in his ninth year. He hasn't been able to do it in the first 8 years. Why would he just turn it around now?
He has to. You know that. He has to.
Well, no, he has.
Paid,
well, you know what? I'm sorry. We've been hearing that for his whole career. He has to do this. He has to do that. He has to do this. He has to do that. You know, we'll see it. Now, as far as being, you know, this is a pit stop for him. He's not going to be on Golden State next year. He's going to be on another team. So this is just, you know, a pit stop for him to get his game back and see if he can get a contract in the offseason. I personally think he's going to be greatly disappointed because I think even if he plays well with Golden State and stays healthy, I still think he's going to get a very limited offer in the summer.
We need him in the big. We need him with Steven Adams. Steven Adams kills him down there, and the Nokic and the Joker. Those guys are, they're gonna. It's just gonna be fun to watch. But hey,
well,
enjoy
you know
the
what?
Show.
Thank you very much. I don't think you need him in Oklahoma City. I think that would be a disaster. But that's, you know, we'll see. He's gonna be somewhere. Someone's gonna sign him. Now I don't think he's gonna get more than a 2-year deal, assuming that he stays healthy. But he might get a 2-year deal. But I don't think it's gonna be for big money. I really don't.
You know, being in that environment, you don't think that he takes anything away from that environment.
Did he take anything away from being on the Olympic gold medal team?
Well, initially he did, but he reverted. Yeah, when he
That's
came back,
point.
That was the best I had ever seen DeMarcus
Cousins.
Okay,
but Cousins. How long did that last?
It lasted about half a year, but
yep.
Losing could do that to some people.
Well,
you know, you're in a situation, and in that particular time, the Kings' ownership was going in and out, and there's constant door of general managers and coaches and a lot of different things. I'm not making excuses. My point is, could stability and a really healthy environment begin to teach and show him? That's what we will see.
All right. Again, I'll believe it when I see it because that's what I've always said about him. I'll believe it when I see it. And, you know, I have no problem saying this. I'm not rooting for him, but I'm not rooting against him. I really am not. I'm not pulling for him. I'm not rooting for him, but I'm not hoping for he has any harm, and I'm not rooting against him. Whatever happens, happens. I mean, I don't wish, you know this, you and I have talked about this off the air many times. I don't care who it is. I never root for someone to get hurt.
No.
That's not who I am. That's not what I believe in. I don't even care if it's someone I don't like. I don't care if it's a player on another team I don't like. I don't root for guys to get hurt. That's not who I am.
No, that's you never want to do that because the one thing about sports is that's the beauty of it. You
Absolutely.
Go out and the equalizer is it's mano y mano, my team versus your team, man to man, and we can work it out. You want to beat most people on a fair playing field. That's why, in my opinion, it's so much fun.
I made this comment on Twitter, and I firmly believe that. I don't think he can make the Warriors better. Now, they could stay the same, but I don't think they can be better. I don't think the Warriors can play any better than they're playing and have played over the last couple of years. So, to me, the only thing that he can do, in my opinion, is disrupt their flow they have right now. I don't think they're going to get any better because they have DeMarcus. They don't need DeMarcus. They could have me playing center, and they'd probably win just as many games. I mean, they just proved that with Kevin Looney. I mean, Looney.
That's why I was going to ask you. So, they get better because he's better than Kevon Looney. So, every time you pass the ball.
But you can't get any better than number one. You can't go from number one to – there is no better than being the best team in the league. You can't be any better than the best team in the league. That doesn't exist.
No. I'm talking offensive efficiency.
I don't
I'm
care about
all
that.
Those numbers.
I care about winning. You either win or you lose. How are they going to get better?
I get what you're saying. Like, there's nothing better in a championship.
For instance, let's talk about offensive efficiency.
Okay.
Let's say they average – I think they average – I'm doing this off the top of my head – 116 points a game. How many points are they? You bring it up. How many
yeah,
points?
Yeah, 118.6.
All right, let's say
in their last three, 136.
Right, their last three without DeMarcus. All right, but let's just say, what do you say, 118.6?
Yes, sir.
All right, let's say with DeMarcus that goes up to 119.6. What difference does it make? They're still the best team. And they're still assuming that Steph Curry is healthy because, right. Doug, to me, that's the only guy they can't afford to lose.
Okay. Now, this is how he can help them, because if he takes a little bit of load off, doesn't that allow you to rest to Steph Curry a little bit more and make sure that he is healthy?
Well, maybe. But, I mean, you know, again, you go back to injuries and make sure – you can't make sure that anybody's healthy. I mean, you know, you played in this league a long time.
Fresh is the word that I'll use. Maybe. Not healthy.
Maybe.
Fresh.
But I also think that's overrated in the playoffs because there are so many days off between games and there are so many timeouts during the games that are longer. I've never really bought into that. I think if you're playing – once every 3 days, you should be fresh in the playoffs. And that's how I look at it.
Yeah, I can't. I never had a – it is a grind getting there. But once we got there, I felt fresh as a daisy. I would agree with you. You got multiple days off. You massage all the different things that you need to do by the time you hit that court. Unless you have an injury, that's something different. Yep. By the time you hit that court, you should be ready to go.
You know, does it give them more depth? Yeah, I guess you could say it gives them more depth. But I want to see him play at the pace the Warriors play, because he hasn't been great running up and down the court in his first 8 years of his career. Now he's playing on a rocket ship team, all right?
This team, with an injured Achilles tendon. That is a big thing.
It's an unknown.
And I would even say more defensively in transition and things like that than offensively.
Yep.
I think offensively, because the allowing him to trail up the court and different things like that, they're very smart on the
they
offensive
They are. I totally agree.
Yeah.
Offensively, it's not going to be an issue for him. Totally agree.
But the defensive side of
Absolutely.
The basketball, making sure transition, the rotations and
totally
different
agree.
Things like that, that's going to be where he – because imagine them playing against James Harden. What do you think James Harden is going to do? He's going to call for the pick and roll. He's going to get the pick and roll. They're going to switch the pick and roll. He's going to back up, and then he's going to go at it.
And so is Oklahoma City.
Yeah. Man, are you surprised how bad Russell Westbrook shooting the basketball?
Yeah, I am. I'm blown away by it.
I really am. Now, from my understanding, he has a couple of nicks and different things that aren't allowing him to get the same type of work in.
I am surprised.
But I am really surprised. I mean, like
I know. It's really subpar.
Yeah.
All right, let's get to AC. You're on with Grant and Doug. Hi, AC.
Hey, gentlemen. Must be fun watching from up there, broadcasting from up where you guys are at.
Yeah, it is fun. We're enjoying it.
I just wanted to say that I agree with you, Grant. I think Kansas City is going to take it to the Patriots. Kansas City fans are great fans, and you know Kansas City is going to be super ramped up for that game. So I'm looking forward to the Patriots going down. And I think the Rams-Saints is a toss-up. I think either way, you could pick either team or have it come out okay. So anyway, thanks. And
all right, have a great weekend. All right, when we come back, more of your phone calls. This is Sports 1140 KHDK. Howard Beck from the Bleacher Report in about 15 minutes right here on Sports 1140 KHDK. Boy, what a low-scoring game we're watching with 2 minutes and 45 seconds left in the third quarter. It's 65-60 Detroit. How about that?
Yeah, you think so? And you know what? Detroit had this game in the bag early on, Grant, and all of a sudden, man, it just kind of went south on them there. And now they are in a bit of a dogfight.
You know, to me, Detroit's a one-man team. It's all Blake Griffin, and they don't really have anybody else that you have to really seriously worry about. Blake is dominating the game with 26, 8 rebounds, 7 assists. He has a steal, and, I mean, he's involved in every single play, and it just seems to me if Blake Griffin's going to have a game, the Pistons have a good chance of winning, and if not, then they don't.
Yeah, they had 53 points at halftime, Grant, so this 12 points in this third quarter has not spelled well, as we see Mr. Dwayne
Wade. Let me tell you something. I could score with defense like that. How bad was that defense that we just watched?
That was really
bad. Oh, my gosh. Just watched Dwayne Wade take the ball on the wing, drive to the baseline, go underneath the basket, and literally not one member of the Detroit Pistons went over to try to stop him.
And let's hope that they play like that tomorrow. This is, again.
Would you rather have Detroit win or lose this game?
I'd rather have them win, but I want it to be a close one.
Right.
Because if they lose, usually you're a little bit more focused. You got your attention.
Yep.
You know, they win this, and it becomes a little bit of a dogfight as it is right now. It's a one-point game. That would be solid. You mentioned something, though, Grant. Listen, Blake Griffin, 26 points, 8 rebounds, 7 assists, 1 steal, 3 personal fouls. And no one else. Well, you got Luke Kennard out there, who's got the ball right now. A little dribble drive and pulls up in the paint. He misses, but the kid out of Duke. He can shoot the basketball.
He can shoot the ball. Miami's on a 19-4 run as we're watching this game right now, and they now lead with a minute left in the third. The score is 67-65. How about that for you?
Well, one thing that Miami does, Grant, is they continue to they continue to come after you. But this defense is absolutely porous from
Detroit.
You know, the other guy who's shooting the ball a little bit tonight is Reggie Bullock, Grant, small forward. He's got 12 points as well. Other than that, those are the only three guys, Blake Griffin, Reggie Bullock, and Luke Kennard, in double figures. Are you surprised how much Reggie Jackson, the point guard, has fell off?
I am. I'm very surprised.
Yeah. He 4 points for Reggie. He's not doing anything.
All right. Again, if you want to get in on the program, you can at 339-1140 and 800-920-1140. Howard Beck from the Bleacher Report in about 10 minutes or so. All guests come to you via the Fire Wings hotline. Try one of their delicious flavors of wings today. Fire Wings, just wing it. The Pistons and the Heat, 5 seconds left to go in the third. All right, let's get to Rick. Hello, Rick. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Grant.
Hey, Rick.
Doug, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Good, good. Hey, you know, I think Grant knows I'm not much of a basketball guy, but I've been watching, you know, every game this year because, and you know, the Kings are looking good. But one thing I have noticed was it just seems like the other teams get so much more offensive rebounds. I mean, it seems like there's just nobody for the Kings that, you know, that drives for the ball off, you know, off the backboard. I just don't understand how many, you know, there's so many second and third chances for teams. It seems like they're, you know, score at will. And another thing with their defense, and last night with De'Aaron, I don't know, he must have had an off night or something, because I think, what do you wind up with, 10 points or something? But I don't know. The thing that really, that I see is that there's so many second and third chances, you know, for teams to get points against them.
Well, normally when you see, I won't say bad teams, but most bad teams, that's one of their biggest points. Now, the Kings are not a bad team, but I'll give you a reference. Last year, I'm sure that the Denver Nuggets radio staff, television staff, these are the things they were talking about with the Nuggets, because they were an elite offensive team, but defensively they were not that good. This year they come back with the focus and intention on the attention to detail on the defensive end, and they go to second in the West. So you are absolutely correct. Allowing offensive rebounds, multiple efforts at this level is not going to be conducive for winning, so the Kings must improve in that area for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it seems like, you know, when they get in games like that, it just seems like that's where they lose, because there are just so many second and third opportunities, you know, and that's when the game goes away from them. But, you know, I think they're doing a great job.
Thanks for the call. Have a great weekend. All right. Again, at the end of three quarters here, it's 69-65. Miami has come from behind. They have completely just destroyed Detroit in that third quarter. Dwayne Wade off the bench with 12 points. It's great to see him play. I just love watching him play in person, even at this juncture of his career. It's just like, you know, you're watching one of the all-time greats.
Oh, yeah. A lot of fun to watch Dwayne Wade get out there and compete. Only 12 points, Grant, for the Detroit Pistons in the third quarter.
That's
30 for the Miami Heat. That'll do it every single time. Now they are in a dogfight, down four going into the fourth. Yes, that's exactly what you want to see if you are a Kings fan. Andre Drummond, though, is...
We haven't seen him since he got hit in the face, have we?
Yeah, we have not, and he took a pretty good whack. So
I don't know if he got a concussion or what.
Yeah, we will know that by tomorrow, but he got a nice hit in the face by Mr. Johnson.
And defensively, they're nowhere near the same team when he's not on the floor.
No, and you can see that, because the middle is open and it's porous. You do have Zaza Pachulia, but he is no Andre Drummond. He'll whack you, but he's not going to eat up the glass the way Andre Drummond does. So if that is something for tomorrow, we'll have to keep our eye on that for all the Kings fans out there, see if Mr. Drummond plays and if the Kings can attack the paint. Because points in the paint is part of the thing I thought, Grant, that was giving the Kings a lot of success, because it was collapsing the defense, kick it out, knock down the three-point ball.
All right, again, these Kings just played the Pistons a couple days ago. It was last Friday in Sacramento. But, again, the Pistons were on a back-to-back, and they didn't have Blake Griffin. So you can kind of throw that game right out the window.
So you get half of that. You get the back-to-back, but you do get Blake Griffin.
Right.
And when you get Blake Griffin, Grant, oh, boy, you get a whole bunch. I mean, as we watch them right now, you know, they got the ball with Reggie Jackson. They're going through some stuff. But every time down the floor Blake Griffin touches the basketball, he's an elite scorer, and he's a willing passer, which means that he gets other guys involved. If they're knocking down shots, watch out.
Little unfair for Detroit. Generally, the NBA stays away from that. They really do try to even it out. You can't. Like three out of the four games against the Lakers this year, it's a back-to-back for the Kings, not for the Lakers. But, you know, the Pistons had a back-to-back, then had to travel. I mean, the second game was in Sacramento. The Kings were idle. They're playing tonight. The Kings are idle. You know, the league tries to prevent that when you only play twice a year, but sometimes it's unavoidable.
As well they should, but you are correct. This sits in the Kings' favor. Yep. Hopefully they take advantage.
All right. When we return, Howard Beck from the Bleacher Report. That's right here on Sports 1140 KHDK.